So, back to the first noble truth. So it was a good place to start. Dukkha. Dukkha means something that's difficult to bear. And the Buddha and his wisdom, he basically said that in life, there's going to be things that are difficult to bear. There's not only going to be the big challenges that we're all going to face. We're all going to face old age. We're going to experience illness. We're going to experience death. We're going to be separated from things and people that we love. And this is going to happen universally. But then on top of that, there's going to be not getting what we want, getting what we don't want. Frustrations, rejections, disappointments. There's going to be things that people do that we don't like. There's going to be subways taking off right when we run for them. There's going to be elevator doors closing in our face. There's going to be people not laughing at our jokes. There's going to be all sorts of experiences. And if we looked and experienced these as universals, transpersonal, not about me, this is the stuff I signed up for by having a human birth, we'd have so much less suffering. But the human mind and the world around us doesn't encourage that. We tend to take all of the little frustrations and disappointments and the discomforts that arise personally. Why is this happening to me? Why am I always getting dumped on? Why am I always getting picked on, criticized? Why am I the one that is experiencing the subway taking off? And why is this traffic happening to me? And then the world chips in, advertisements. You need this product to brighten your teeth. If you had cleaner clothes, a better smile, better body odor, if you had a better 401k, nicer clothes, a better apartment, shinier hair, more hair, less hair, the perfect hair, the perfect personality. If you had this thing that you don't have now, well, then you wouldn't have to put up with this shit that's happening. The illusion is that there's a way to live without discomfort, and there is no way to live without discomfort. That is the Buddha's first noble truth. It is universal. Shit happens. But the mind's in reaction to taking it personally, streaming this long laundry list of why me's. This person said this and that, and clearly there's something wrong. We fall into an agenda or a trance of grasping, which is basically the idea that if I could only get this one thing, this perfect place, to this beautiful time, to that beach chair in St. John's, and in my vacation, or could I get to this perfect time and place where I could truly find peace? There's this constant grasping for something that we believe we don't have here and now. We believe we're missing something. That's why I'm experiencing suffering. That's why I am feeling empty. That's why I'm feeling sad. That's why I'm feeling lost and confused. Not because these are universal human experiences, but because there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong that I'm missing. I need to get something. I need to get a hold of something. So this grasping takes an entirely internal state and then sends us outwards into the world looking for that thing, that little bit of thing that I don't have. Sometimes it's a state of being. Institutions tell us when we get a diploma, when we get to, we're graduate students, when we've written our postgraduate thesis, when we pass this test. Just give me that thing. Even spiritual centers can fall into this, you need to go to this perfect weekend away in Massachusetts in the Berkshires. You can't have happiness during your day-to-day life. You can't have peace of mind then. No, you've got to come here and get Noah to give you the special sauce. What's the ingredients? The special sauce. I need to know because I don't have it. The core of this movement the Buddha taught in something called the Paticca-samuppada is basically we have feelings, vedana, which arise. Vedana only comes in three kinds. Vedana comes in, I like this. This is good stuff. This is great. The body relaxes. Everything, the feeling tones relax. Then there's Dukkha Vedana. I don't like this. This is bad news. This something's not good happening right now. I'm not happy. I'm uncomfortable. I want this all to go away. And the third is I don't give a shit Vedana. So
technical term.
Technical term. I don't give a shit Vedana. So very, basically, your Vedana, your gut feelings say one of three things. Yay, nay, or I abstain. That's it. But when we experience these feelings, especially the Dukkha Vedana, what we tend to do is look around and see who happens to be present, and we blame them. Oh, this guy. That's why I'm feeling this tension. Oh, you. Oh, this food. Oh, this situation at work. Oh, Monday. Oh, I can't believe it. Now, if Vedana always arose directly because of the person or the situation we were in, maybe there would be some usefulness to that. But the Buddha went on to teach that Vedana is where karma from the past comes in that might not have anything to do with the person we're with. And this is very well established and when we study post-traumatic stress disorder. You can, in your earlier in life, have had a bad altercation with somebody wearing a brown suit. Later on in life, you meet somebody with a brown suit, they say, hi, how's it going? Immediately, the entire body tenses, and we feel uncomfortable. Dukkha Vedana arises simply because this person's wearing the same suit. So it's incoming karma, but this person has not done anything to cause our discomfort. But what we do is we grasp or we try to get rid of the person. So we react to these underlying states that we're often unaware of how much tension we're carrying until they suddenly erupt and we're so uncomfortable that we just want to take it out on someone. Cases of road rage where somebody's holding their tongue at work and feeling belittled and powerless in life, and suddenly somebody bumps into their car and they take out a tool and they get into a fight because the person who bumped them had nothing to do with all the tension they were carrying around. They just happened to be there. So this grasping, this whole motion of trying to find the solution out there is often almost invariably misguided. And the solutions that we're trying to do to get rid of these feelings, which are purely natural, don't work. Because all of these discomforts, all of these uncomfortable feelings, they're inevitable. That's what it means to be alive. We're going to experience discomfort. And so rather than following our usual agenda, which is, I'm uncomfortable, I'm going to change what is happening around me. I'm going to leave, I'm going to stop what this person is saying, I'm going to do something out in the world. The process is one of rebalancing. And I'm going to talk about what that entails in a moment. This whole notion that the solution is not in me, that I've got to go out and change or grasp or acquire or become or whatever, it does certain things to the way we perceive life. First of all, this idea that right now I can't be happy. I've got to get to that beach chair, that weekend, that vacation. Right now on the subway waiting for work or in the car in traffic or, you know, Tuesday morning in the shower, I can't find peace of mind. This idea, what it does is it says that the present moment we're living in isn't good enough. Happiness is out there. It's in Kripalu. It's not here in, you know, Brooklyn. It's somewhere in the future. So it's this moment no longer becomes an open possibility, an endless possibility. It becomes this tiny little subservient moment that's taking us to that special moment of awakening that'll happen way down the line, or that moment when we finally get to relax, you know, in Barbados, down the line. This moment becomes just a whole bunch of days, but they don't really have any real beauty or depth to them. Another thing it does is, because it's outside of myself, this thing I'm looking for, it really diminishes the power of this place I'm at, where I'm at right now. How does my body feel? What's going on inside of me? Because it's not in me, I'm telling myself. I'm saying I have to get something out there. I have to accumulate. I have to get more power. I have to get more approval. I have to get more, I have to post more things on Facebook so people will like me more. That's what I've got to do. That's the answer. I've got to join this Instagram thing and have everybody know what I'm eating. Maybe that way I'll get the love that I'm missing. So we're looking for something out there, because right now in me at this moment, it's not good enough. It's just not good enough. I'm missing something. So the third thing it does is it creates a story of an I, me, that's lacking. I who am missing. I who am incomplete. I who need Noah's special sauce. The thing that he hasn't told me it yet. Maybe at the end of the weekend he'll tell me the thing I know that will drop me into peace and happiness. Because certainly I don't have it. I don't have that magic wisdom. I don't have the right personality, that self. I need to become someone better. I need to get to a better place at a better time. So what we're diminishing is what I am right now, where I am right now, what is going on right now. This is why when we get to the Buddha's teachings and the Adhyanas, the Buddha says, true peace is letting go and falling into a state where we don't want to go forward. We don't go back. We don't stand still. We no longer even create a world. The idea is, and you hear even some monks talk about when they're truly peaceful, there's no longer space and time. It's not a big mystical statement. They're simply saying that when there's craving, we feel that the moment we're in is so unimportant, the place we're in is so unimportant, that we want to get somewhere else in the future. We want to get somewhere else in the world where we can be happy, because this place isn't good. But when we truly can fall in to our present, the texture of our present state, and embrace what's happening, then the whole feeling of this need to be more space and more time and another me begins to fall away. The huge possibility of each moment opens up. That's the opposite of craving, is turning and saying, no, there is nothing that I need right now. What I need to do is to turn to this feeling of discomfort, this feeling of Vedana that's launching me into this belief that there's something wrong, and turn my attention directly towards it and embrace it with compassion to see what's asking to be felt. Very often when we go through breakups in life, after the breakup, we go around obsessing over and over about the person that just broke up with us, even though the relationship might have been a week long. we obsess and obsess and obsess. And that's because it's attached to older feelings of being rejected that we've never paid attention to. So rather than listen to the stories or try to figure it out, I go in when there's obsession, when there's anything repeating, and I ask myself, what needs to be felt right now? What needs to be listened to and attended to? Sometimes I'll just sit in my meditation and I'll say, okay, I've just been through a difficult experience. What's asking to be felt? What's asking for my attention? And I'll sit. Often, in my case, it's my stomach that will be tight. And as I release it and open to the feelings there, older stories of breakups, rejections, disappointments come up. And I can sit and give them the attention that they've never had. Now, going to the antidotes to the whole grasping, the whole trying to find the solution always by externally buying a new book, getting a new, you know, snowboard, the new perfect self-improvement course, the new whatever it is we're looking for. What does rebalancing, upekkha, look like? There's a sutta where the Buddha gives a bunch of anecdotes to what he calls asava, flowing out into the world, looking for happiness out there. And here's some of the anecdotes he gives us, the tools that we need to be comfortable with who we are and to lead a more balanced mind. The first, he says, is to maintain a state of awareness as to how much of our awareness is flowing outside of ourselves, and how little of it is aware of what's going on. How much are we aware of the breath? How much are we aware of the feeling states in the body? So if we can maintain a sort of hyper-awareness, a sort of meta-awareness of how much am I flowing outside, and when I'm in a conversation with somebody at work, how much am I leaning forward, out of myself, living in front of my body, can I pull it back in? A good way to do this is I practice, the first moment I wake up and I take my shower, I just practice being present in the shower, feeling the shower. Part of not attaching means not thinking about things that are not present. And the way I do that is through each of the processes of the day, that waiting for the train, taking the bike over the bridge, the shower, each moment bring my awareness to it so that I'm not pushed outside of myself trying to leap forward in time to a different place, anticipating a conversation. I'm staying present. Mindfulness during car rides, putting down the future. This is really important to developing the antidote to clinging. Clinging is... when we hear the word clinging, we think it's like literally physically holding on to something. What it really means is thinking about something when it's not appropriate. That's all it means. If I'm at work thinking about work, that's not clinging. That's not attachment. If I'm on a date and I'm thinking about work, that's attachment. That's clinging. If I'm carrying something around with me after any useful engagement with it is done, that's attachment. So very much this antidote to grasping is diligently throughout our lives making sure we're present, that we're truly engaged with who we're with, that we're not bringing what happened during work or what happened during the past with us into each engagement. That's really important practice. As Noah talked about, opening to emergent truths. When we sit and when we talk with people, rather than try to fixate on how they're reacting and to control their discomfort and to make everything go the way we think it should go, to sit back, to stay, even physically sit back, but to stay in the breath, in the body, to keep myself balanced so that I'm not flooding outwards, so that I can allow that person to have whatever response they're having, so that I don't interrupt. They can say whatever they want to say. And as I'm sitting, I feel the different feeling tones arise and pass, but I'm not driven around with them by them anymore. Even if discomfort arises with what they're saying, sometimes it makes me want to say stop and interrupt and make what they're saying go away. But if I can sit and allow the discomfort to arise, to breathe into it, to be with it, and then after a while I see, oh, something in myself is being triggered by what this person is saying. It's something I need to explore, to look into. It might not be anything that they're saying is wrong. It might just be that I'm uncomfortable with a memory or with the issue as it plays out in my life. The fourth, the Buddha talked about rebalancing with the way we treat the requisites of life. There, we all need, this is not a practice of self-denial, self-mortification. We all need certain things to be healthy, to have meaningful lives. The Buddha listed four, the four requisites. We need clothing, shelter, we need food, and we need to take proper care of the body through medicine and exercise. So this is an excellent opportunity to develop what we talked about earlier, which is working with things without attachment, without clinging. We engage with food and with clothing, not to compete with other people, not to have as much as other people, to look, to have the same clothes as other people, or eat the same food, or live in a house bigger than somebody else's, but to simply find what is enough so that I can turn my attention to living a compassionate, generous, peaceful, appreciative lifestyle. So we're transforming our relationship. If I'm thinking about my food when I'm not there, that's clinging. If I'm thinking about my house when I'm not there, when I'm here with you, that's attachment. If I'm relating to these things appropriately so that they don't cause undue stress, I'm doing just enough that I achieve a level of a satisfactory living, then I'm rebalancing the mind. I'm no longer fixated upon competing or making a show of who I am through my clothes, through my food, through my house. It's not an extension of me anymore. It's simply a means so that I can get to truer practices. And again, I can enjoy all those things, but they're no longer presentations of the true me. I'm no longer making a statement to the world through them. Tolerance of the inevitable disappointments was a very important part of this in the Sabbasava Sutta. The Buddha says that he says that there are going to be mosquito bites and irritating things that people say. That's the two things. He jumps from mosquito bites to uncomfortable things that people say. Both are going to happen. Not a thing we can do about it. So if we run around trying to get pissed off and change other people, you know, completely get outraged by the unskillful little things that come about as a part of being a human being, that's going to lead us off into a campaign of stress and suffering. If I can simply learn how to allow other people to have their unskillful remarks, and as Noah said, live in the knowledge that they have to live in the karma. Those are the people who are wiring their brains that way. Neurally, they're creating future minds for themselves to live in. I don't have to participate. Another way the Buddha talked about it is he once had a story, a tale of a man's son had converted, and it was his only son. And the father was really, really upset with the Buddha. And he came to the Buddha and he started shouting and insulting the Buddha. And the Buddha sat there quietly. And basically after the guy called him like a lickspicket, which in that in those days was bad stuff. I don't know what it means, but it's bad. You don't want to be called that back then. So anyway, that's in one of the translations I read. So anyway, after the guy ran out of breath, he said, "So what do you think about that?" And the Buddha said, "Well, let me ask you this. When you have guests over for dinner, do you serve them food?" And the man, very almost outraged, said, "Well, yes, of course I feed them food. Who do you think I am?" And the Buddha said, "Well, if guests came over and they didn't eat your food, whose food would it belong to?" And the guy said, "Well, it belonged to me. It's my food. It's their problem if they don't eat it. It's my food." And the Buddha said, "Well, I don't choose to eat your words. So they're your words. You have to live with them. You have to live with your anger. You have to live with that. That's how we tolerate." Then, on the other hand, the Buddha said, we avoid situations that are avoidable that can cause suffering. There are times in life where we go back and again and again and again to places that have shown themselves to be unskillful. We call up exes trying to get love. We call up parents sometimes trying to get acceptance when that's not going to happen. We call up and go back into situations that always cause suffering. These are not inevitable. These are avoidable. And rather than keep going back again and again trying to figure out the way, the Buddha said, when it's clear that something is causing us suffering, to avoid it. He uses the example of a hole in a road. You don't walk up and lean in. That's what you do first, he said. But over time, you learn not to even go down that street. Sometimes if the suffering is donuts, we go right up to the donut store and look inside. Eventually, we know just to keep walking. The seventh is to replace harmful thoughts with skillful ones. And the skillful ones we're learning this weekend, which are compassion, kindness, appreciation, and balance. And finally, the most important is to always, again and again, turn our attention back to embracing what's happening inside of us with a agenda of we no longer have to be driven by our gut feelings, but instead we can look and listen and give them the attention that they deserve. Most of the time when I sit with difficult emotions and difficult feeling states, I find that the only thing they're after is attention, awareness, something to listen and be with them. In the practice of Unisamanasikara, the Buddha says that when we give attention to difficult states, invariably we see that they change and that they pass. So it's not about when we turn inwards at times and rebalance our awareness, we're not giving up. It's not resignation. It's not even acceptance necessarily. It's a deeper form of working with our experience so that we open up to the possibility that what has been asked to be felt is just willing to pass if we give it the attention it deserves. So that's the role of balance and compassion and dealing with feeling and craving, and I hope you got something out of it. So thanks for listening. And now it's your turn to ask any questions or start any conversations that might come up during that talk. Thank you.
So both, actually some time now for both. Any questions for Josh about what he's just spoken about? And also any comments about...